ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The ABC AFL Daily Podcast, where you know on a Sunday night, every game is going to be covered with all of the big issues too. Five drops per week, five different flavours. If you're not listening to all of them, you're missing out. And on a Sunday night, ready for your Monday morning commute, Ben Cameron with the former Hawthorn and Carlton champion, AFLW Coach of the Year in 2019, Daniel Harford. And we are starting tonight, Harf,
yes,
with a game earlier today in the west of Sydney. GWS booting 14 goals unanswered in the third quarter, the highest scoring ever third term in the AFL era. And they went on to win by 78 points against the reigning premiers, Brisbane. And our takeaway is, our Sunday night takeaways, the GWS are the team with the biggest gulf between their best and their worst.
It's like the graph that coaches would draw pre-season. They draw this graph on the whiteboards in the rooms, and they would have the, you know, the old XY axis thing. And they draw a big squiggly line just wobbled up and down all over the, from the top of the X-axis, which is the tall one, isn't it? And the Y is the wide one?
I think so.
Yeah. So they're all the way up and all the way down, all the, touching almost the bottom of the axis. And they say, we can't have our, the gap between our best and worst be this. We have to just, and they'll draw a little squiggle, just a little
more
fine
flat
squiggle,
line.
More flat line. That's got to be the gap between our best and our worst. And the Giants have clearly displayed today that that is a real peak, isn't it? That's a real peak from what we've seen from them in the last couple of weeks. I mean, they got beaten by the West Coast Eagles last week, admittedly over in Perth. They got beaten by the Eagles and have been really struggling for the last month of footy. And Adam Kingsley's, I remember him saying a couple of weeks ago at a press conference post-game, someone asked him about how you're going. We'll be fine. We're okay. We'll be fine. And I wasn't with him, I must admit, in the last couple of weeks. And coming into this game, I was even more worried for him. But on the back of that third term, you have to start to think that sometimes there's a switch that gets flicked. That might have been the switch for the Giants to get their season back on track, because they were off track for a little while. But that third quarter, it doesn't make any sense in any sense of analysis in, when you review it or try and predict how and why that happened. It doesn't make any sense in the grand scheme of things against a team like the Brisbane Lions. Like, they're the last team in football you'd reckon anyone to kick 14 straight against in a quarter. So it doesn't make any sense. But to your point initially about the gap between their best and their worst, I reckon you'd be rapt if you're Adam Kingsley, but also pretty annoyed about what's happened the last couple of weeks.
So just to try and make sense of it all, it's the second time this century that a team has lost to the Wooden Spooner from the previous year and then beaten the reigning premiers the next week.
Yes.
So 2017 was the last time. Geelong lost to Essendon in round eight, and then they defeated the Western Bulldogs in round nine, who of course won it in 2016, the year before. Even that,
there's an asterisk.
That's got a little asterisk next to it, because Essendon had the banned 34 players in 2016. So they were kind of a false Wooden Spooner, if you will. So it's a strange turnaround from week to week. Just to contextualise the scoring power in that third quarter, the highest ever third term score by a team, 14,286.
That's a lot of points.
They scored five goals in 7 minutes of real time, eight goals in the first 17 minutes, and then another six in time on. So the Brisbane Lions, it feels like for that to happen, Half, had to just turn their toes up in some ways. So the Giants, who lost Lachie Whitfield pre-game to a hamstring injury, they're essentially without nine of their best 23. It was important for them. But what is your level of concern for the two-time reigning premier Brisbane Lions?
I'm not. If it was any other team, I'd be really concerned, I reckon, the way they've played the last couple of weeks. But because it's Brisbane, you give them an out, because they're proven contenders when it gets to the back end of the season. You reckon they'll qualify for the finals. They don't need to be top four. They've proven that before. And they can still win premierships. So you give them an out, but they're in a bit of a patch. It is a really funny time to be a footy fan watching the Brisbane Lions. Now, I have no allegiance to, or non-allegiance to, the Brisbane Lions. They're a great footy team I like to watch, but they're not the team that, certainly they've been obviously in the last couple of finals series in the last couple of weeks. It's just really odd. I can't explain it. I mean, I think Dane Zorko makes a massive difference to this team, not 14 goals and a quarter difference, just by the way, but I think he makes a massive difference to this team and what they do defensively, more importantly, offensively. And him being out, I think, takes away a bit of their natural flair and positivity, I reckon. And sometimes they can be hemmed in a little bit. But no, it's a bizarre situation. I don't really want to think there's too deep an analysis you can create on this with the Brisbane Lions, because it's just so, that's just really weird. There's no reason for that.
I've been crunching the numbers. No team that has gone on to win a premiership at the end of the year has conceded 14 goals in a quarter at any stage in that year. So
that's
history is instructive.
Stat.
So it's not a good omen if they want to make it three on the trot.
Well, there's not too many teams that have won three in a row either. No. So that's hard enough as it is.
No.
And you want to have your best players out there. They've got a few injury concerns, which certainly wouldn't be helping. But yeah, no, that's bizarre. That is a bizarre quarter of footy.
Half, I was in this very box here at Docklands yesterday afternoon when I saw one of the most incredible games I've seen in a long time. People were dancing in the aisles as they sung Hearts to Hearts and Hands to Hands. They were throwing children up in the air. There was a woman in front of me out the front of the commentary box who was turning around, giving it the double cobras, celebrating 16,260 people. Where were you, Kangas fans? It was an incredible day. They didn't lead siren to siren.
No.
And Cam Zerha kicked a goal after the final siren to win it. And our takeaway is that win was worth more than the 4 points for North Melbourne. They needed a scalp.
Well, that's correct. It's 100% correct. I mean, they'd beaten a few teams down at the bottom of the table, and there was a real excitement about what North Melbourne might be able to do. And then they had a couple of weeks where they got pants. And last week, of course, Adelaide put a big stretch on them in that game over in Adelaide. And we thought, well, the Kangas will beat up maybe on the teams around them or below them, but still haven't got what it takes to beat a team above them. And, gee, they showed some mettle. To be 43 points down, 38 points at half time, and then come out in the last half, in the last quarter in particular, 11 goals in the last half to 4, 7 to 3 in the last quarter, when the game was on the line. And it was more than just the way their capacity to come back. It was the way they did it. Like they were more aggressive. They were harder running. They made really bold decisions. They played really bold footy. And if I'm a Kangaroo supporter, that's what I love more than anything else. The way they played to get back into the game. Not just the fight. And we love all that stuff. But the way they played, dismantled Gold Coast in that second half, in the last quarter in particular, to run away with that quite phenomenal victory. And I'd be excited if I was a Kangas fan. That's the one you need. You need the one that validates and vindicates all the commentary and all the work you put in, all the coaching messaging that's coming in about we're on the right track. You've got to have a moment against a team that you really rate, who I think, and I'm sure Clarko would rate the Gold Coast Suns, and not most North Melbourne fans would. You've got to have one of those moments where you get it done. You find a way to get it done against a quality team. And that might be the moment. Who knows? We'll see where it all ends up for them. But that was a special day yesterday for the Kangaroos.
Made a couple of moves, Alistair Clarkson. Put Cooper Trembarth into the ruck. That changed it. Bull Zerha, who kicked the winning goal, not just because of that, but had been playing down back. He went forward. That seemed to help them a little bit. So their second biggest comeback ever, half, to come back from 43 points down late in the second to win that game. It's also the ninth time this year we've been monitoring this stat on this podcast that both teams have kicked 100 points. Only happened 5 times last year. Just a note on the Gold Coast Suns.
Still 160 games left, isn't there?
Yeah, there's a lot of games left in the season. A note on the Gold Coast Suns. They still aren't the big dogs. They're not willing to get off the porch and run with the big dogs. And their coach, Damien Hardwick, has famously labelled this big boy month this part of the season.
Yes.
Coming back from Darwin the last 3 years, they've won one of the 4 games after the 2 games in Darwin. So
who have they played? Because they've been relatively poor, in fairness.
Yep.
And even in the Hardwick era, they've been relatively poor, a team as a whole. Now, they exploded last year. We've got a bit more of a read on what's to come, and they've had moments this year, but they've been a long way off what people would have expected them to be, I think, this year so far, the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, and they've got Murderers Row coming up. Brisbane, Geelong, Hawthorn, Fremantle.
Oh, walk into that month.
Yeah, so that could be a monumental slip-up for them.
Walk into that month. But, I mean, part of me laughs, ironically, just the Docklands situation with Damien Hardwick. He's never been a fan of this place. How do you reckon he would have been getting on the bus last night, getting ready to go to the airport after that loss?
He was more measured in the press conference than you would have thought. I thought, you beauty. I went home, got the popcorn out, logged on to afl.com.au, ready for the press conference, and he was pretty measured. He said, a loss is a gift. Like feedback half.
There you go. It is
so
a gift.
Just a gift. They can learn from it and move forward.
Prefer to get the gift when you win, though. You still have lessons and gifts when you win, too.
You can. They went into game-saving mode too early in that match. The game we've just broadcast, the Western Bulldogs defeating Melbourne by 3 points. And Sunday night takeaway half, the Western Bulldogs lived their coaches' theme song for the season with a tooth and nail win.
Yes, they did. Tooth and nail, absolutely. A couple of points in the end for the Western Bulldogs. And it looked, midway through the second quarter, it looked as though it was going to be a how far the dogs type scenario. They were hot to trot. They led by, was it 33 points at one stage through that second term. And then the D's got on a bit of a run and finished the quarter with four goals in 10 minutes and got the game got back on track. And then it was a real arm wrestle. And it was tooth and nail. They had to fight tooth and nail. And they were tough. That second half and the last quarter in particular, when the game was on the line, they were tough. They had big players stand up. They had role players who had big moments. Riley West had one of those when he chased down Jack Steele on the outer wing, got the free kick back, and ended up being the goal to Joel Frazier, which was the match-winning goal, who'd had a bit of a rough day himself, Joel Frazier. So they just, it had everything. There was drama, it was tension, there was stress, there was lack of composure, but there was a real fight from the Bulldogs, and it's a game they needed to win. We talked about it pre-game about they just had to find a way to get it done. It was never going to be easy because of the way Melbourne had been playing. They seemed a bit off, in fairness, in the first half, the D's. They're a bit off what they've shown so far in season 2026, but I reckon Luke Beveridge would be absolutely rapt with his boys' performance and the fact that they stayed till the end. They fought to the very, very last moment and ended up with that famous victory. He'd be pumped with that, I reckon.
It sort of keeps their season just rumbling along, doesn't it? Like, clearly they won their first four games. We're all talking premierships for the Dogs and,
yep,
and how good they could be. Bob Murphy on the Tuesday episode spoke about the injuries like it was, you know, going to be a gap year for the Western Bulldogs this year. So this gets them to 6-5 and just keeps them moving along and a chance if they can get some soldiers back as to what they might be.
On paper, still, they're pretty slick.
Yeah.
You look at them on paper and think, oh, he's a bloody good player. There's a lot of those, oh, he's a bloody good player. But they haven't been gelling together as a team, but they got it done, which was good.
Yesterday afternoon, it was the golden milestone, 433 games for Scott Pendlebury. The game's record, he went past our man, Boomer Harvey, who we have a poster of here in the box.
We do.
We've got the old Herald Sun, it's Phil Knight poster, isn't
caricature,
it?
Not,
I was
yeah.
going to say the Wegg poster,
no, not,
but
not the Wegg.
It's newer than that.
He's almost old enough to have a Wegg one.
And it's got most games played. And we joked here today about whether we should write second.
I think we'll get a texter.
Yeah, get the Sharpie out and write second.
He'd be flat about that.
Above that. But yesterday, for Collingwood, for Scott Pendlebury, I think my main takeaway half was that no club could have done this celebration quite like Collingwood. What did you take out of the day?
Nah, it was a great build-up. And I think you're right. I think there's only one team in the competition that could have done it as well as Collingwood did. In every facet, they managed it really well. Yeah, Scotty was everywhere, but that wasn't necessarily their doing or his doing. The interest in it was fantastic. And fair enough, too, because I think we discussed last week or the week before, Benny, that it's possibly the most significant moment in the game's history. Mm. To have a player at this age, in this modern format of the game, to go past the all-time games record, it's a brilliant achievement. And rightly, it was celebrated yesterday in front of 90,000 people at the G. I wouldn't have thought too many times they would have budgeted for that coming into the season, the Magpies financial team, when they were talking about crowd figures and how much they're going to make against the West Coast Eagles at the G. So that's a boon for them. But it was rightly celebrated. And I love the fact that, and there's been all the talk about him wearing the gold number 10 on the back of the jumper, and part of that sat uncomfortably with me. We might have even chatted about that.
Which is fascinating. It feels like that's a common thread from all of the past players. I heard Cameron Ling say that earlier today, that it seems to be, look, you don't separate yourself, irrespective of the circumstances, from your team.
Yeah, and that's the way you got to play it. That's the way it has to be, because in the end, it's a team game. Now, one player can do amazing things, and we've seen all-time greats do awesome things through the journey of the history of the game. And that yesterday was one of those moments for Scotty. But in the end, he was out there with his teammates. And when they rolled out with the gold numbers, I thought, oh, fantastic.
Yep.
This is great. That's the way it should be.
If I was a player,
a special differentiation, no worries. But we're all in this together still. This is great.
Plus, how great would it be if you were one of those players? Like, my immediate takeaway was, that'd be awesome. I'd keep that gold number jumper of mine and say that was the day I played in Scott Pendlebury's record-breaking game. So,
well, you won't be allowed to wear it again, so you've got to do something with it.
Yeah, I actually thought it came up pretty well. Collingwood should consider it
more
often.
I'm with you. No, it was fabulous. It was a great
day.
It soured in the end.
Yeah, he shook hands with all of the other 400 gamers. Kevin Bartlett had another function that he was at, couldn't make it, which Collingwood knew about weeks in advance, apparently, yep. according to his son on Twitter today. But shook hands with the others, met his kids at the top of the race, ripped off his warm-up top, which he always wears out through the banner normally, revealed the gold number 10. His kids were waiting there. Then at the 10-minute mark, which I was driving home from here at Docklands after our game North and Gold Coast, and I heard it broadcast on the ABC. Big cheer, round of applause, everyone holding up the 4-3-3 signs. And then we had the coincidence or the irony of the number 10 just kept repeating. A 10-point margin for yep. Collingwood over West Coast. 4 plus 3 plus 3 is 10.
Yep.
Scott Pendlebury's number 10, so it just kept coming up. You mentioned Jamie Elliott, though. Confirmed today by Collingwood, a confirmed ACL injury late in that game. And Darcy Moore, a moderate-grade hamstring injury.
Yeah, he's becoming a bit of a problem for them and his ability to get out there consistently. The Magpies, the skipper there, Darcy Moore. But, I mean, the story is Jamie Elliott. He's a phenomenal player. For a guy his size to do what he's done and still had a lot of injury challenges along the way, it's a really sad end to a joyous day for the footy club and for the Pendles, and I'm sure he'd be devastated for his little mate as well. So that's a real blow for the Magpies, let alone Darcy Moore, you mentioned. That's a problem for them going forward. We've talked about my belief in them or lack thereof this year and what they are as a team. I think they're still struggling. I mean, to beat West Coast by 10 points at the MCG is another indication of that, I reckon, considering the emotion of the day. So I'm not necessarily a massive fan of what they're able to contribute this year, but yeah, he's one of the players that I would go to the footy to watch, Jamie Elliott. He's an excitement machine. He takes the big hangers. He works his backside off. He kicks goals from out his backside sometimes.
He's enigmatic, isn't he?
Yeah, he's awesome. He's awesome. So I'm really really sad for him that's ended his season. And who knows what it does from there? Because he's 33.
Yeah.
It's a 12-month injury. You know, start or middle of next year. If you want to be conservative with him, what does that do? Collingwood's demographic, their list profile it's not the way to win a premiership, not a premiership list profile at the moment. So what do they do? It's going to be fascinating.
Just very quickly, any issues with the Tyler Young push on Jamie Elliott as he was in the end? No issues.
I like zero. It.
Nice and quick. I just want to highlight, fourth time in 46 years that the game's record has been broken. So KB in 1980 in the qualifying final, Tuck in 1990, Boomer 2016, and now Pendles in 2026. It might be a long time before we see it broken again. So it was a big day. I want to make a note too. The Eagles have the right youngsters in their team. They loved that big stage.
Oh, so they did.
That was a little eye-opener for me too.
It's the biggest crowd they've played in front of outside of grand finals.
Yeah. It was a big crowd. So, and their youngsters look like they loved it.
They've been good the last couple of weeks. They're growing on me, the Eagles.
The hidden game was Geelong and Sydney down at Cadinia Park. The Cats won by 27 points.
When was that?
And right off the Cats at your own peril.
Yeah.
Which Mark Murphy did on the Monday show a couple of weeks ago. Since then, they've beaten Brisbane and they've beaten Sydney, Daniel Harford.
I think I might have too at one stage. I can't remember if it was with you or somebody else, but I think I might have as well. Look, we always know they get an extreme advantage from playing games down at Cadinia Park. And their record there is ridiculous. So they'll bank them. And then they're really experienced and well-coached footy team. And with some superstar players. So that helps too. So they've still got a pretty good mix. I was a bit worried about them coming into this season. I had them in the six, I think, maybe the bottom end of the six. Not sure. But at the start of the season, they weren't playing the way that I thought they should have been playing. But they are really back on their tucker at the moment. They are really hungry. And watching a piece of that, didn't say all that game yesterday, watching a piece of that game yesterday, the way they manipulated the game to their advantage, this is the brilliance of their coaching staff, led by Chris Scott. But the experience of their players to manage it in game is... They're the best at that. They're the best team at managing games from a player-led perspective in game in the competition. Collingwood have got some real leaders out there, but no one manipulates a game on the fly like Geelong do.
We spoke about this. Chris Scott, you said that he's the best at changing his team to take away the opposition's strengths.
Yep.
And, I mean, we saw Collingwood guard the corridor, stop Sydney's forward handball game, come forward with pressure, which we spoke about on this podcast courtesy of Ryan O'Keefe's comments a few weeks ago, and maybe they've done that again, the Cats half. But I would say 2007 was the start of this great Geelong we've seen, where they continuously contend year in, year out.
Mm.
Since the start of 2007, when they play a top two team on the ladder at Cadinia Park, 15-3.
Is that right?
So we know how good their record is at Cadinia Park, but when they're even playing the best down there,
yeah,
they win so often.
Well, that's the advantage, isn't it? I mean, yeah, that's why you want to really embrace that and get as much out of that as you can from a leverage perspective. If you're Geelong, play all the good teams down there, particularly the, and a lot of those teams would have been interstate teams too, who wouldn't necessarily draw a crowd here at Docklands or at the MCG. So play them at home, play the good teams at home, and beat them on your own turf. That's a good model that is for Geelong.
They are beating the best teams too. I mean, they've got wins against Frio, Brisbane, Sydney and Adelaide, and a 1-point loss to Hawthorn. So
Frio, Brisbane, Sydney and Adelaide, all interstate teams.
Yeah.
Who are good teams. So it's a real advantage to be able to have those games on the home deck.
And they manage Dangerfield too, only played 57% game time. So that's what they do. Chris Scott also, you spoke about taking away the strengths of the opposition. Note that he rotated Edwards, Blitzarves, Sam De Koning and Shannon Neal all through Brody Grundy, who basically went at one out.
Yep.
And basically they just wore him down.
Yep.
So we've said they might need to rest Grundy at some stage throughout the year. He's basically rucking solo. So they've just got to monitor the wear on Brody Grundy as the season progresses. Halfway through the pod, which means it's time for Half Serious. What are you half serious about?
Well, the game's got a problem. We've talked about some of the challenges the game's faced in the last couple of weeks, Benny. But Greg Swan is a man of change. He's
an agent.
He's an agent of change, is what he is. He's been given the all clear to do pretty much whatever he likes at headquarters for the betterment of the game. Now, I would like to have a chat to Greg one-on-one. He might even be able to come on the potty with us. Because
Swan on in.
I like that. It's a good segment. Because the way that the ball now is distributed by hand is not anything like the origins of the game, the laws of the game dictate it should be. There should be a punching of the ball from a stationary fist, effectively, or palm, effectively, to your teammate. That is a handball. And it's a skill that's required to be executed and mastered to be a player in the AFL or play Australian rules football, full stop. Mm. What we are allowing and counting as handballs is desecrating the good name and the origins of the game. I spoke to Kevin Bartlett. You mentioned him before. I spoke to Kevin Bartlett about this last week, just in a casual conversation. And we got to this and aired our enormous frustrations on this, where Kevin, I'm not sure if it was flippantly or he was serious, said, you know what's going to happen? They'll end up just allowing people to throw the ball, which I think would be a disaster for the game. Effectively, that's what's happening. Players are throwing the ball left, right and centre. They turn away from the umpire. It's really clever the way they do it. I'll give them some credit for that. But they just throw the ball and they hoik it and they sling it over their head with no punch of the fist. It's just a two-handed throw, effectively, and it's going 20 or 30 metres. That's what KB said will happen. They'll get tackled one hand in the end and they'll just hoik the ball 30 metres forward to goal and that'll be play on, because we want continuity in the game. We want flow in the game. It's the charter of the competition at the moment. But the charter of the game, the laws of the game charter, is in a cupboard somewhere at AFL HQ, and we need to find the key to that cupboard and get it out and have a look and just reread what it is to be a legal handball. Because what's happening at the moment, I think, is nothing short of desecration of the great game of Australian rules football. And I'm only half serious.
You'll be pleased to know I've gone to Ray Chamberlain, our rules official here on ABC Sport.
Have you?
And
how did you know I was going to talk about this?
Just got a sense throughout the game that we've just broadcast. He said, he sent through a screen grab which says the legal method of disposing the football by hand, executed by holding the ball with one hand and hitting it with the clenched fist of another.
Yes.
He said, note, much to my disgust, the ball no longer needs to be propelled by the fist. So long as the fist hand catches up with the ball carrying hand, it gets the green light.
No, so this is where it's slings,
yeah.
Slings and throws. This is where the whole thing breaks down. So that in latest interpretation, which I don't think is in the charter, by the way, in the cupboard at AFL HQ, where they can't find the key to.
We'll check the charter.
Well, now we can find the key, mate. This is the problem. It's where the wet bulb is as well.
Yep.
We don't know where that is, but it's there somewhere. Someone's got it somewhere. It's the same cupboard. That needs to be changed. That needs to be going back to the official laws of the game, because that's not good for the game. This is a game of skill. This is a game of talent. You have to be able to master the craft of the game to be a great AFL player. Throwing the ball doesn't fit that mold.
No, we will follow that up and get to the bottom of it here on this podcast. Half, I can tell you, I live with a Foundation Fremantle member, 31 long years of suffering, and they are starting to believe it is Wharfie time. 10 in a row, a record 10 in a row for the Fremantle Dockers. You know that purple is a colour of frustration. Psychologists will tell you that.
Is that right?
Yep. I think it's been proven. But this is a team that can score in a hurry half.
Why would you put your colours as purple if that's a colour of frustration?
How's this? Round 5 in the rain against Collingwood, they kicked 3 goals in 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. Round 6, the Western Derby, 4 goals unanswered in 11 minutes. Round 7, they kicked 4 goals in 6.5 minutes against Carlton. Round 8, they kicked 4 goals in a 6-minute period as part of 7 unanswered against the Doggies. Then in round 9, 5 goals in 9 minutes against the Hawks. And then against St Kilda on Friday night, they kicked 6 goals in 20 minutes in the final quarter. They can pile on the pain, which previously they've dropped anchor. They're pulling the anchor back up into the boat. And they are a speedboat.
And they are speeding towards victory every week. That's right. Now, they're a great team. We've talked about them before. They fill just about every criteria for a contending team in terms of personnel on the field. And now they've got a system of play that seems to be marrying up with their personnel and the talents on the field. And that's an interesting little stat you got there, because back in the, not too long ago, 4 or 5 years ago, it was Carlton. Carlton were the team that would score in a rush.
Yep.
They could kick 5 on you in 8 minutes. And they would do it a lot. But they obviously had that run to the prelim a couple of years ago in 2023. They were that team that could really pile it on really quickly. Curnow and Mackay and all those blokes. But there hasn't been a team outside of that, I don't reckon, that's been able to do it relatively in the last couple of years. And now Freo are taking that mantle as being the ones that are able to hit the scoreboard and give you maximum damage really quickly. And it does break games. We saw it from Melbourne here today. They kicked 4 in 7 minutes in the second turn to get back into the game.
It's pretty much where they're winning their games. They'll have one burst at some point that will be the difference. That Collingwood game was really close, and that was the difference. And I'm sure you could go through the others.
Really close.
The Hawthorne game, like that is where they're winning at the moment. The Fremantle Dockers.
I really like watching Fremantle play. They're an entertaining team to watch.
I agree. They got stars all over the ground. Murphy Reid. Woo.
He's coming with a rush, isn't he?
All Australian.
He'll be in the 40.
Yep. He might be in the team. The way he's going. Essendon fans on Friday night, the Dreamtime game, great game to celebrate each and every year, the Indigenous contribution to our game. Essendon fans were throwing their scarves at the team as they walked down the race and jawing at them. And Nate Caddy
after
was
the game
saying some words back to them post-game. That was how frustrated Essendon fans were. But how much of an out are you willing to give Essendon and, by extension, Brad Scott, due to the injuries and extenuating circumstances on Friday night?
Yeah, no, that's not the night to be throwing your scarves and berating the players down the race, that one for me. I mean, they at the start of the game, if you said that was going to be the outcome with a relatively healthy bench, then that's when you can start throwing your scarves. But with losing McGrath and losing
Durham.
Guelphy and the big bloke.
Archer May,
who I quite like.
Yep. Caldwell played hobbled too. He had a bad bung ankle.
So in-game injuries can really cause damage to you. And when you're not going well, it makes it even harder to win games of footy. Now, Richmond came in with barely a side filled. So we know that they've got their own concerns. But they didn't have any in-game. I had one or two little sneaky ones, in-game injuries. So I don't think that's the night to be berating and throwing your scarves. Look, I'd be as frustrated as anyone if I was an Essendon fan of what's happened in the last 20 years, let alone the last two. And it's going to be a rough couple of weeks, but they're going to have some outs in terms of those injuries, because they are players that you cannot afford to lose if you're Essendon.
Yeah, Essendon have 18 on their injury list, so they pulled out Elijah Sardis and Will Setterfield from the VFL. So they had concerns around fielding a team for next week. Hawthorne and Adelaide. A take out of this game is whether the handling of Nick Watson's potential concussion was handled appropriately. Now, Sam Mitchell joined AFL Saturday, which you can get in this podcast feed, and said this about the handling of that incident.
Oh, I think it was a great example of exactly what should happen, and that's the doctor, as soon as he saw an incident, he ran out straight away. It'd be silly to wait to re-watch the vision of it. So he ran out straight away. He assessed him live and said, I think he's fine. Went back, watched the vision, said, you know what, that looked a little bit. I'm just going to make sure. I'm going to go back out, make sure we get him off, do the assessment. He went and did that, and then he passed the assessment and comes back on. So I think it was a really well-executed plan, which is exactly what the AFL wanted to happen. To think that he should have come off straight away means you're going to have to delay and pause and wait to make sure you see the vision, and you might not get out as quickly. So I thought it was really well handled, and I have full faith in Westie and our medical team to handle those things well.
We might just let that stand as comment from Sam Mitchell. They won by 9 points to make it 12 in a row in Launceston, where they're getting kicked out of at the end of next year. Port Adelaide were defeated by Carlton by 34 points. And my takeaway here, Half, was that maybe Patrick Cripps does have more juice. 31 disposals, 8 clearances, 9 score involvements, and 1 goal.
He's always had the juice. There's no issues with Patrick Cripps' juice. There was an issue with the weight that he was carrying on behalf of his footy club. That was the problem with Patrick Cripps in the previous 6 weeks or so. He's a jet. Like, we know that. He's got all the juice in the world. And with a bit more support and some flow on the outside around him, then there's no issue. And that's the freedom that's been given to the Carlton players at the moment. The weight's been lifted and you're getting an injection of energy from new players as well. So it's a perfect storm for a guy like Cripper to just embrace the challenge again, this new challenge under Josh Fraser, and be the leader that everyone knows he is. The whole conversation about Patrick Cripps was very, very premature.
Yep. Makes me think of the great movie Heat. Remember the line there? The action is the juice. It's not about the money, Half. The action is the juice.
Who was in Heat? I saw it. I remember seeing it. Who was in it?
I think, is De Niro in it?
De Niro? I reckon it might have been De Niro.
I'm pretty sure De Niro.
Or Pacino, one
great,
of those two.
Might have been Pacino. Great movie. Lots of great actors are in that. After the dead cat bounce, the ones that won the first week are now 3-4 the next week. So the trend does tend to continue, or it's a good chance of continuing after you win after the sacking of your coach.
They weren't that far off, no. Even with the sacking of the coach. They just didn't win games.
Now, Half.
Sounds stupid.
I've got something I'm going to launch on this podcast channel tomorrow. What? That I think is very exciting. It could be an overwhelming success, or it could be a monumental failure. I'm not sure which
one. You know what you're
doing?
You're taking a risk, and I love it.
It's all about taking risks. We're going to do that tomorrow, if they let me. I think they will.
Who's they?
The higher ups, but you can wait to hear that if you're a fan of this podcast.
Righto,
potentially tomorrow.
I'm a fan.
Half, love your work. Great job as always.
Always
5 drops a week.
5
different flavors. If you're not listening to all of them, you're missing out.
True.
Tell your friends. Goodbye.